You're listening to the Radio Cafe, coming to you from the Santa Fe New Mexican and RadioCafe.org, where you can contact us at any time. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. We're going to be talking today about gun safety laws in New Mexico, and a group of young people who are trying to make a difference. We'll be back with all that in just a half a minute. Los Alamos National Laboratory Foundation strengthens education in northern New Mexico so that learners of all ages can reach their full potential, offering grants that fund public education and community projects, building resilient children, families, and communities through early childhood programs, providing K-12 wraparound services for students and teachers with Inquiry Science as the flagship initiative, investing in students' dreams through scholarships, and creating a solid foundation for learning and systemic change through partnership and advocacy. For program information or to give, visit lanlfoundation.org. I'm very happy now to welcome Miranda Viscoli. She is co-founder of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence, and we are joined by high school students Sophia Lucier, who is a senior at Desert Academy, and Maki Omori, who is a senior at New Mexico School for the Arts. Welcome.
Hello.
Hi.
Thanks for having us.
Good to have you. Now, gun violence is a topic that we've been talking about on this program for many, many years. And in New Mexico, there have been a number of school shootings, one of them very recent here in the Rio Rancho area. We've also had a shooting a couple of years ago at Aztec High School. There was another shooting in the Roswell area in 2014. The whole question of what New Mexicans can do about gun violence, and especially in schools, but not limited to schools, is something that you, Miranda, have been following since Sandy Hook.
That's correct. And I've been researching the situation of gun violence in New Mexico, and we're some of the worst in the country. We have some of the weakest gun laws and some of the worst gun violence, and that correlation is not a coincidence. We are every single year losing, would go up and up in how many people we're losing. The latest numbers we have are 2017. We had 412 people shot and killed in New Mexico. That does not include the hundreds that are injured. We lose 2 children a month to gun violence. I was just talking to a UNM trauma nurse 2 weeks ago. We were teaching classes. We do a lot of work in schools. We were teaching classes and helping middle schoolers not to do unfortunate things with guns. And she said, we had 6 teenagers come in with gunshot wounds to UNM Trauma Center last week.
Last week?
Last week.
What are some of the circumstances under which people get shot? I mean, how much of it is accident? How much of it is drug-related, drunkenness? How much of it is young people who really shouldn't have their hands on them in the first place? I mean, paint a picture for us.
So basically, when you look at young people in New Mexico, it's 48% are suicide, 48% are homicide. The rest are accidents or legal intervention. So that's a pretty small percentage. In terms of adults, 68% are suicide. In terms of intimate partner homicide, we're the third worst in the country of women being shot by their intimate partners. The majority are with a firearm. And the violence ranges all over. I mean, people say it's all gangs and drugs. It's not all gangs and drugs. I worked with 8 young people that were in high school this summer, and every single one of them experienced gun violence, and it was all over the place. It was a boyfriend shot and killed a best friend a week after she graduated from high school. Another committed suicide. Another was drugs. Another was intimate partner homicide. So it really was a huge range of why people are shooting and killing themselves.
And gangs is part of it.
Gangs is definitely part of it. But a lot of people say, well, you know, we don't have to pass any laws because these are all gang members on drugs. Mm. Like, well, yeah, they're people too.
Right.
I mean, I can't, that argument's kind of disturbing when you think about it.
Yeah, especially if you are somebody who really, truly values the dignity of all life.
Right.
So, Sophia and Maki, how did you get involved in these questions of gun violence?
Well, I started an Amnesty International at my school. And
Desert Academy.
At Desert Academy. And at that time, we had had the Parkland shooting. And it was sort of this question of, okay, well, what are we going to do about it? And I joined this group called the Student Advocacy Union, which I met Maki in. And in that, we were the ones who put on the April 20th March for Our Lives rally, which took place at the Capitol. And after that, it was really successful. We had worked with Waves, and, you know, we had 400 students come. It was a really, really iconic moment for us.
Waves?
It used to be called SWAT. It's a student group. And afterwards, my friend Tulia and I were meeting with Miranda, and because New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence had also been a part of that. And afterwards, we were meeting with her, and we decided we wanted to do something more. It was like, okay, well, we had the protest, what next? And my friend Tulia jokingly said, well, we could pass gun legislation, ha ha ha. And then Miranda was like, okay, yeah, let's do it. And so we went through it. We looked at the different legislation that they had previously tried to pass, so we didn't have to draft something completely new. And we decided that the Child Access Prevention Bill was the one we wanted to focus on, since it was directly affecting us. And we could speak from experience, we could speak on behalf of youth. And so that's why we chose that one.
Now, talk more about child access prevention. What does that mean? What's the law about?
So basically what the Child Access Prevention Bill does is make it a misdemeanor for parents or adults in general to leave firearms out in the open. If a minor gets a hold of the weapon and causes any sort of damage, the parent or adult will be fined for it. And so basically what this does is keep guns out of the hands of children and promote safe storage.
And so that's one of the bills. It's called House Bill 130, and that is going through the legislature right now. Maki, how did you get involved in this issue?
So I think it was the day after Valentine's Day last year, so the day after the Parkland shooting, or maybe 2 days, and I got a call from a guy named Theo who went to Santa Fe High, and he said, hey, I'm tired of feeling numb, and I want to do something about what just happened. And someone referred me to you. They said you were interested in youth activism because I've always been like a part of community building and youth outreach, different like groups. And he said, let's meet, get everyone you know who wants to be a part of this, and let's just do something. And then from there, we were bouncing around living room floors, kids from every school in Santa Fe and even some schools not in Santa Fe. We were just all sitting in a circle on the floor in my friend Chloe's living room, and we said, we're starting the Student Advocacy Union. I don't think it was called that then, but
we had multiple name changes.
But that's really how it started. And I stayed with the Student Advocacy Union and just kept promoting it and kept it alive because I saw the difference it made in all of my friends to finally feel like, I don't know, we had no bureaucracy we had to go through to become what we were and to advocate for others. And we were speaking at the Santa Fe Public School Board hearings, and they were listening to us. And then from there, it just escalated where we realized that, like, hey, people actually care about what you think. And Miranda is always telling us that our voices are really important, and that's nothing I ever realized until I started doing that work.
Most important voice in the room. They listen to them because they have to.
Right.
I mean, you feel like a jerk when you see these young people who are working around the clock on gun violence prevention. And what are the adults in this community doing? You know, they're the ones whose lives are at stake.
Yeah, my experience with that has been really interesting because when there'll be people out the door testifying against a certain bill and the politicians eventually start zoning out, they're hearing the same thing over and over again, so they stop listening and they very clearly are on their phones and things like that. And as soon as a young person, whether it's myself or, you know, one of my friends, as soon as they come up to the mic, everyone stops and starts paying attention. And so with that kind of experience, it is really empowering to know that, you know, because we're young, although that's put a lot of hurdles in our pathway, at this stage, it is a huge benefit for us.
What's it like to go up there and testify?
It's terrifying, not gonna lie.
Even though you're like an actor, you're studying theater.
Every time, I am, but that feeling never goes away. And it's not, because when I'm doing theater, I can maybe put on a persona and it's not my words that I'm saying, but when I'm going up and testifying, it's just me telling the truth of how I feel. And being in front of a bunch of adults who have been on their phone for like 3 hours and who look at first disinterested. And I guess having to tell these people who I feel like they are responsible for my life in a lot of ways that they've failed me isn't something that's easy. It's really hard. It's really hard to do.
And I personally get very emotional when I talk about it. I've been personally afflicted, and I know people who've been personally afflicted. And so I want to maintain this sort of, you know, very professional stature. But at the same time, as soon as someone mentions suicide and gun violence, as soon as I hear testimony about someone who's been lost, I immediately start crying. And it's really hard because I don't want that to invalidate anything I'm saying, because I know what I'm talking about. And, you know, I understand this issue really well, but I can't help but have, like, at least some tears every time I hear about it again.
Right.
When you say you've been personally afflicted, what do you mean?
Well, my cousin was shot and killed in Albuquerque, and he was, I don't remember exactly how old he was. He was somewhere between 18 and 19, which was really shocking to hear. But even besides that, just being a young person in school has been really scary. And meeting people who, you know, have lost count of the friends and family members that they've lost. I've had a friend who has had a gun held to his head 8 times. And all of these stories and things like that, they really take a toll on you. And so, yeah, even just going to school every day and knowing that I could hear gunshots ring out in my hallway. I mean, we've all been afflicted by gun violence, whether or not someone's actually died.
What is that like? I mean, I was sort of trying to remember high school and all the different ways that we felt unsafe were interpersonal. You know, they had to do with teachers or horrible other students or being bullied or something like that, which is not even comparable to what you guys are going through. And one of the things that I think is so scary and real about this is that you can't learn when you're scared. I mean, what role does that fear play in your daily lives? Like, is it always a kind of low-level thing, like a thorn in your skin?
Right. Yes, definitely. And it's weird because the country that we live in, and because we have so little laws, I remember some of my first memories of realizing that this was an issue was when I was in maybe third or maybe fourth grade, and we had a training at our school where they, you know, taught us what to do in a lockdown, and the teacher told us, you know, if your classmate is in the hallway or someone you know is in the hallway banging on the door begging you to let them in, you can't because they might be the shooter. Those words, I don't think I will ever forget. Or learning how to barricade a door, but then how to use the extension cords in a classroom to wrap around like the little metal things of a door to make sure that the door can't open. These are just things that I had to learn, but having to do that obviously is really scary. And then also, I think there's always that little anxiety, and it seems irrational, but there's so many people in my life, and maybe in yours too, and maybe all of ours, where I just, it's like I can't have a normal relationship with them because every time I see them, I feel like it might be the last. So there's no lightheartedness to my teenage friend group anymore. For a lot of us, you know, people who are affected by domestic violence or, you know, have guns at home or around, it's scary. And I feel like I've had to become a 30-year-old overnight almost, or not even 30, that's not even very old, but I just had to mature so quickly because I grew up with a notion and fear of my or my peers' deaths.
Yeah, and I used to go to Santa Fe High, and being at a really big high school was definitely really frightening. We had multiple lockdowns, real actual lockdowns, and I was only there for a year. And having those experiences at the time they didn't affect me very much because, you know, it was normal. Like, yeah, sure, someone was on the campus with the gun, but, you know, that happens often. So it doesn't really mean anything if no one got shot. And even, you know, with the shooting at Cleveland, when I found out that no one had been injured, my immediate reaction was like, oh, okay, well, never mind then. All right, well, it doesn't matter because no one was shot. And I just realized how awful that was, that we've become so desensitized that the fact that someone had a gun on campus and was aiming to kill someone wasn't even a big deal anymore. And thankfully, I'm lucky enough to go to a small private school now where the threat isn't as prevalent, and still there's that notion of, at any moment, I can hear gunshots ringing out in my hallway. And that scares me so badly. And every time, you know, I read these testimonies from people who were in shootings and, you know, in school shootings and things like that, it's just, it has affected me so much. And I know even just last week, I was sitting in class and I just thought about that for a second. I just started crying. And like, it was in the middle of class. And so, yeah, and then the fact that not only are we just afraid all the time, but now that we're activists, we're out of school a lot to be passing these legislation and to be testifying and things like that. And, you know, I remember my SAT score wasn't very good because I wasn't able to study for it at all. And even just that small thing, that's really upsetting, that I couldn't do this very normal high school thing that would help me get into college because I had no time to, because I was constantly at the legislature or working on the bill or planning a protest. And as much as I love doing that, it shouldn't be my responsibility. It should be more of something that I can do for fun and I can do because I love it, not if I don't, we might die.
Mm-hmm. Right. And that's how I feel about all of the bills we're trying to pass. It's not for the sake of politics. It's actually because I think it's important to save people's lives, and that's what's at stake here.
Yeah. Miranda, there's another bill that's a Senate bill, Senate Bill 328, which is about keeping guns out of the hands of domestic violence offenders and people who have restraining orders and things like that. Tell us about that.
So that's a bill that we worked on. We actually passed it 2 years ago through the House and Senate. I think I was on your show talking about it. The governor vetoed it, obviously.
Martinez.
So we're going back this year to try to pass it again. It looks very good. It's a stronger bill than it was. And the reason why we, New Mexican Sprint Gun Violence, is working so hard on this bill is that we were looking at the numbers and who was getting shot and what could we possibly pass that would really make a difference in prevention. And the domestic violence issue is a really, we're in a horrible situation in New Mexico in terms of intimate partner homicide. And what we were seeing was that not only was the mother, usually a mom, was being shot, the kids were being shot with her. We were seeing horrible cases where whole families were being taken out. And all this bill does is, you're under a protective order, so there is due process. The judge makes a finding of abuse. That person cannot keep their gun or guns until the protective order is over. Protective orders last anywhere between 6 and 5 years for the most part. Once in a while, you get a lifetime protective order, but if you have a lifetime protective order, you really should never have a gun. And we were also concerned that oftentimes the domestic violence felonies are pleaded down to misdemeanors. So you're looking at thousands of domestic violence that potentially were felonies but keep getting pleaded down. So they're pretty violent people that are keeping their guns. In addition to that, in New Mexico, another reason why we wanted to pass it is because our local law enforcement cannot remove the guns right now the way the law is written. Only the feds and the ATF can. So there's a federal law that says if you are a domestic violence offender under a protective order, you can't have a gun. You're already prohibited.
But it can't be enforced by the police.
It can't be enforced by local police or state police or
the
sheriffs.
Oh, my goodness.
So only the feds and the ATFs can remove the guns. I know a woman right now. I've helped her move 5 times. The man has 5 guns. Nobody knows where they are. Held a gun to her head for 5 years, threatening to kill her and her children. So she keeps moving because she doesn't know where his guns are. And the local police would love to remove those guns, but they can't. The judges cannot require that those guns are removed. So not only would this save lives, it would also help women and men who are survivors of domestic violence to make sure that they feel safer, that they're not constantly feeling that they're going to get shot and killed. And you look at the numbers in New Mexico, we're the third worst in terms of intimate partner homicide, and most of them are with a firearm. So if people care about this issue, Senator Worth and Senator Cervantes are the sponsors. Please call them, thank them for introducing this legislation, and call your senators. We do have a mirror bill in the House, House Bill 87. It's already passed. So Deborah Armstrong and Senator Antonia Cedillo-Lopez were the sponsors on that. That one's through. So we need calls to your sponsor to please ask them to pass Senate Bill 328.
I have to say, it does sound like kind of a no-brainer, taking guns away from people who have a restraining order against them for violence or the threat of violence against somebody in their household. Those people right now can have guns.
They can. I mean, somebody said, you're going to spend the next 5 years trying to get guns out of the hands of domestic violence offenders. If they said that to me 5 years ago, I said, you're crazy. Why can't we pass this law? I mean, that's how, but in New Mexico, passing any law in terms of gun violence prevention has been so difficult because of the previous administration. So we saw that the background check bill got passed in the House and Senate. Obviously, our governor's going to sign it. And we're hoping that this one will too, because this is a no-brainer. I mean, and the person gets their gun back. I mean, and then you hear this, oh, it goes against Second Amendment rights. You're going, why are you protecting the Second Amendment right to somebody who beats their intimate partner?
Right. And, you know, just as an aside, the Second Amendment was about militias, which was the colonial version of the National Guard or what is now a standing army, not about individuals owning guns.
But now we do have sheriffs starting sanctuary Second Amendment, trying to start sanctuary Second Amendment cities throughout New Mexico.
What does that mean?
It's kabuki theater is what it is. What they're saying is that they don't have to uphold any of these laws if they're passed because they go against the Second Amendment. So you have our armed law enforcement, our sheriffs, actually saying that they will not enforce the law.
Well, that is a future chapter, should this law be passed and signed, that we will keep you updated on, ladies and gentlemen. Meanwhile, there are people in favor of this, of these laws that are up before the New Mexico legislature right now, and you two young people have been there with many other young people testifying. What kind of opposition are you guys seeing when you get up and, you know, say your piece and you know, walk around the legislature?
I think the biggest opposition we've had so far, or the people that have shown up the most, are the sheriffs. There were about, I think,
29
out of 33 sheriffs who have been opposed to almost every single bill that Miranda and I and Maki have helped testify for. And really, their biggest concern is that they won't be able to enforce it. And that goes for really any law so far or any piece of legislation that we've tried to pass, is them basically saying they don't know how they would manage to do it, which is really confusing for me, because if that were true, that would be really upsetting and concerning. However, we've had states before with these laws, and they've managed to do it. I don't think it would be any different here in New Mexico, so I'm not really sure what they're talking about. But for me, that's been the biggest piece that I've seen, has been sheriffs.
Right, and I don't really understand that, the logic behind it either, because from what I remember, what they were saying was you can't legislate evil people. Like the
criminals will still get guns. Right. What's the point of passing any of those laws?
Like the thought process for them, what they're saying is that the 29 sheriffs, is that this problem is so big that trying anything isn't going to work, which that doesn't make sense to me, and especially if you're an official of the law. That's where you start. Like, how do you eat an elephant? Bite by bite, right? And it's almost mind-boggling to me, because, like, Linda Trujillo brought this up. We have people speed all the time, but we have speed limits for a reason. People drunk drive all the time, but we have laws against that for a reason. And although you can't, every single time a person speeds, you can't immediately make them stop, that doesn't mean that you shouldn't try pass law. Yeah.
It's also statistically untrue. I mean, we've seen states with the cap bill enacted for over 10 years have had a 22% drop in their accidental shootings of minors. So it just, that's, you can't, I don't know. It's really interesting to hear people say that, because you can look at actual facts and statistics and see that that's inaccurate.
And in terms of the child access prevention, I think what's really important about it is there's one study from the Department of Education and the Department of Defense who they did a study and they found that 2/3 of guns used in school shootings are coming from the home or the home of a relative. We've seen that over and over in New Mexico. The Roswell shooting, the Clovis shooting. The Clovis shootings is beyond tragic. The young man who killed the two people in the library and injured 3 others, there was a young man who was suicidal. He had a meth problem, and he was in a home where he had access to firearms, and the father gets off scot-free. I know another young woman who the courts brought to us. Part of her probation is to work with New Mexicans to prevent gun violence. She was at a house party. Grown-up brought a gun, took the magazine clip off. She took the gun. Her and her boyfriend at the age of 14 were playing with it. She pointed the gun as a joke at her boyfriend's head, pulled the trigger. There was a bullet in the chamber. She watched herself blow his brains out and he died. She got involuntary manslaughter. The gun owner got nothing.
Yeah. Right. Now, this would change...
This would change that. So now it would be a misdemeanor, which would be up to, I think it's 9 months in jail and a fine. And there, if more situations with that person happens, then the sentences get stricter and stricter.
I was just going to say, some other opposition that we've seen has been this idea that every parent parents differently. And there was this big argument that someone who trains their children well enough shouldn't have to lock up their guns. And for that, I think it's really important to say no one thinks that their child is capable of committing a crime. No one thinks that their child is going to get a hold of that weapon and commit a school shooting. And yet they do, and it happens. And so it's not about, you know, going into people's houses and telling them exactly how to do things. It's making a baseline, just this baseline of a place where after that you can, you know, choose how you want to do it, but you have to have some sort of protection of your weapon and your firearm. And I understand if you train your kids, sure, that's fine, but you also should, you know, lock up the weapons. And so I think to me that's been the most interesting argument so far, is that, you know, that everyone parents differently and training your kids is enough, because it's not enough. And kids are kids, and it doesn't matter if you tell them enough times that they should be afraid of the firearm. That doesn't always stop them from getting a hold of it and playing with it or committing suicide. You know, I just think that this law really enforces having just like a baseline of protection, really.
And correct me if I'm wrong about this, but some opposition that I've also noticed, and like what the press brings up a lot and what's like flashy and to scare people off from the bill or even considering it, is they say, oh, this bill is meant to criminalize and throw parents in jail and rip them away from their children. It's not a criminal bill.
No.
It's not. It's actually, it's really fair. So if you're reported to maybe be negligently storing your firearm and you have minors around and someone thinks there's an issue, CYFD gets involved. And what they do, and what I heard Representative Trujillo saying, is that they make a safe storage plan with the family. They work with them to say, okay, well, this is an issue, and we're going to make a family plan for you. It's not some person on the street notices that there's a gun inside the house, calls the police. The police are in there just taking the children,
ripping them from their parents.
Exactly. That's how a lot of, I think the opposition is trying to play the bill off as, but it's a bill that considers everyone in the situation, and it's not a criminal bill.
And we see that through studies that it does work, that there is a reduction of kids getting hold of guns. And we had people who were saying, they were giving testimony saying, well, I've taught my 4-year-old not to touch the gun. You can't teach curiosity out of a kid. And what happens if there's a play date? And another kid comes over and hurts themselves with the gun. You know, guns need to be, they need to be secured. They need to be locked up. And also your bill is very fair in that kids can still go hunting with their parents. And if there's an accident, they are not liable. That's a very different situation. This is negligent storage of a firearm. That's all it is.
And the fact that there are some parents who might teach their children well doesn't mean that there aren't many more who aren't doing it well.
Exactly.
And if you are teaching your children well, and if you are doing real gun safety at home, chances are none of this is even going to apply to you in the first place.
Exactly. Yeah.
Have you guys, I mean, I've heard stories about people going to the legislature to testify about gun bills and feeling intimidated by people who are there with guns. Has that happened to you guys?
Oh, yes. So when we were expert witnessing for the cap bill, there was someone there who brought his firearm and had it in like a container, and he got up in front of all of us, and I don't actually even know what his point was. It was a really like frantic and loud presentation with his child running around everywhere, and he just was kind of trying to whip it out. He was making some sort of point. It wasn't a very good point. It didn't stick with me what his point was, but he did have a firearm, and he got up there. You're not supposed to leave your seat, I don't believe, but he got up in front of all of us, in front of Sophia and I, and made direct eye contact with us and was like
flashing his weapon
and like finagling with his gun in its case. And it was, yeah,
it was very strange. It was a really weird thing to witness. But for me, the weirdest thing that happened was this woman who stood up in the back and started saying about, you know, Second Amendment rights, all of that. You know, we're used to hearing it. But somehow she blamed it on immigrants. And I really don't know how immigrants came into the picture for this bill. I mean, we're talking about preventing children from getting access to guns. And all of a sudden she's talking about 30 men wearing black crossing the border in her yard. And I had no idea how she managed to bring in not only the Constitution, but immigrants all in one thing. And it was like every stereotype you hear for really conservative people just wrapped into one argument.
And then ended up saying people who commit suicide do so because they don't love themselves. You just proved a point as to why, so especially weird, with teenage children, the gun should be locked up.
Right.
I mean, it was a ridiculous piece of testimony. But also in terms of the guns being, I mean, I'll be honest, New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence, we were always a little bit nervous about bringing young people into those committee hearing rooms because people are armed and loaded. And democracy should not be who has the biggest gun in the room. But people are intimidated, and there's a lot of emotions flying, and the guns have no place in that building. They have no place when we're talking, we're trying to have a fair democratic process, when people are afraid to testify because they show come into a room and they see half of that room filled with a bunch of folks that are armed and loaded.
Yeah, and my friend Hannah, who works with us on this piece of legislation, she gave a testimony, and in it she said, I just want everyone here to know that I don't feel comfortable being in this room right now. And everyone got so upset. Everyone started scoffing and laughing, and you heard some gasps, and people couldn't believe that she had called them out, and the fact that she was afraid to testify and be a part of the democratic process because so many people had loaded firearms, which is a very fair point, but people aren't used to being called out in that way and realizing not everyone's used to being around guns, and no one really should be used to being around guns in that way.
So what are your hopes, all of you, for this current legislative session and in a sort of bigger picture of New Mexico?
I always say that I hope that the next generation of New Mexicans and the generations after them don't have to grow up the way we did. And I'm speaking for myself, but I personally grew up in a really privileged environment, mostly in small schools. But still, that constant fear and anxiety you're talking about, I want children to just be able to be children and to run around school and not have to worry about, oh, you left the back door open and you get detention for that because that's huge safety hazard, or losing your friends left and right. That's my biggest hope. And then also, I think all these bills, like I said, they're lifesavers. More people that are alive in New Mexico and thriving. And I think it's these bills are going to be a part of stopping cycles of abuse that have been perpetrated in this country, but in our state for a really, really long time.
I think really in New Mexico, children have to grow up at a much faster pace than really anywhere else in this country. And for me, I always noticed things, and it was hard because I would notice the gunshots and that were down my street, or I would notice the fact that I kept having lockdowns. And really, I really hope that New Mexico can get to the place where I would feel comfortable raising my children in. Because I know as of right now, I don't. I want to leave as fast as possible because I want to go someplace where I'm not scared constantly. And that shouldn't be that much to ask for, and yet, you know, it is. And really, New Mexico has this cycle of, it's just, you know, it's in this cycle right now where the future generation is being slaughtered at the rate of 2 children a month, which is absolutely obscene. And when you have something that horrible affecting everyone around it, you can't progress as a society and you can't get better. And, you know, New Mexico isn't doing very well in terms of really anything as of right now. And how is that going to get better if we're all dying and being traumatized? And those of us who aren't want to leave because we want to go someplace that's safe. And so really, I just hope that we can get these pieces of legislation passed and we can make New Mexico a much better place to be in and to live in and make it so that people aren't afraid anymore.
And Miranda Viscoli, when Sandy Hook happened, the children who died, these little first graders, your children were that age.
Yeah, they were 2 years older, but yeah, they were very close in age, and that I knew nothing about guns, and that's what got me trying to fight this crazy fight. And I will say that because now the majority of the work we do is with youth and a lot of youth in high-risk situations, I can tell you right now, we are not taking care of them. I know way too many kids that have serious PTSD because of the amount of gun violence they've seen, serious trauma, depression because of losing family members. We're not taking care of our young people when it comes to gun violence. And those stories aren't in the news. The only reason why I know them is because I work with those kids, and we do need to start taking better care of our young people in this state. Poverty and drugs have a lot to do with it. You know, we need to get serious about rehab in this state. I mean, we have a meth problem and a heroin problem among youth that's out of control, and that's all tied in with the gun violence. So I do think that we need to, you know, really sit down and have a plan on how we're going to do this. And our work right now is obviously to get House Bill 130 passed and Senate Bill 328, the bill to get guns out of the hands of domestic violence offenders. And then next year, or in the next couple of years, New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence is going to go after, hopefully, an assault weapons ban, because we're really concerned about what the cartel is doing on the south of our border in terms of assault weapons that they're buying in our country and using to basically destroy Mexico and South America. So that's something we're looking at, and a 10-day hold on buying handguns.
I think on a personal and maybe more selfish note for what I hope for these bills, and like especially domestic violence bill, but they all play into it, is like, I know I have an ex-boyfriend who has a restraining order for domestic violence, like, against him, or maybe a few at this point. And I'm, like, not the only person in my friend group. And I think I would like to feel safe, just, like, from the very basic level. And, like I said, maybe kind of a selfish place, but I really do feel like these bills are a life and death situation for so many people, which maybe a lot of our politicians who oppose us don't understand. They think we're doing this for fun, or that we're just starstruck by the legislative process and just like trotting behind Miranda doing
starstruck.
Whatever, even though it's terrible, doing whatever she says because we're high school students and we want to ditch school. But
I'm just going to say, wanting to feel safe isn't selfish.
Yeah, I was going to say that's not a selfish
maybe
thing
at this point it feels like, maybe it feels like it, but like because I know so many other people who are in similar and worse situations that I'm not an isolated incident.
Maki Omori is a senior at New Mexico School for the Arts. Sophia Lucier is a senior at Desert Academy, and Miranda Viscoli is co-founder of New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. Tell people, Miranda, the website of
go to newmexicanstopreventgunviolence.org. We also have a Facebook page, which we post every day. You can get information about bills and who to call. You do not have to be a Facebook member. You can just put in New Mexicans to Prevent Gun Violence. Then, of course, we have our Twitter handle and our Instagram. So, you know, social media is a great way to, probably the best way to reach us. And if you care about this bill, call your senators and tell them, please pass Senate Bill 328, the bill to get guns out of the hands of domestic violence offenders.
Miranda, Sophia, and Maki, thank you all so much for being with us.
Thank you. Jinx.
You've been listening to the Radio Cafe. I'm your host, Mary Charlotte Domondi. This program is produced in collaboration with the Santa Fe New Mexican, an independent newspaper since 1849. The New Mexican is on the web at santafenewmexican.com, where you can find out about our community and you can subscribe to the digital and paper editions. You can also find previous episodes of the Radio Cafe on the web at radiocafe.org. And if you want to send us any feedback on the show, ideas or comments, please write an email to feedback@radiocafe.org. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.